all. Welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Thursday morning. And joining me from New York City is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys. How are we doing?
Joining us back from vacation. God bless you, McMahon. Back from Bermuda. It's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I realized I forgot to give a good old-fashioned howdy, partners. On last week's episode, I'll leave the country and lose my manners, but I'm back, boys.
We're all back for the stretch run here. I'm in Phoenix, where Kevin Durant is probably not going to play his first game on Friday night against the Thunder. One thing about Durant, he's an expert at coming back from mid-season MCL injuries. So while I'm sure it's in contact with the Suns doctors and his own specialists, if Durant says he needs a certain number of days and he'll be back, you trust Durant, because when he's come back from these injuries, both with the Warriors and then with the Nets, he was very good. The thing about Durant is he comes back from injuries very well, the Achilles being the prime example. But anyway, I am here to see and spend some time with the Suns. Got a little run up towards a game next weekend in McMahon's backyard. I'm going to be making my first trip to Dallas since pre-pandemic. Next Sunday, not this Sunday, is who the Mavs play the Lakers this Sunday, right, McMahon?
The Lakers this Sunday, yeah. So I got to deal with McMiniman this weekend and you next weekend. This is
right.
I need a bonus, a hospitality bonus.
Vacation is over. So the Suns are building toward that game for the Durant Kyrie reunion. We'll see how that actually goes. But as we get started here, I mean, it's not the second half. I see people talking about the second half. Most teams have 20 to 23 games left. It's the last quarter. It's the last quarter. So we're going to take a look at some things that are very of great interest. And I'm going to start in a team we don't talk about enough, but we should. And that's the Denver Nuggets, who perpetually get overlooked. And I think they partially get overlooked, not just because in the West, they are dwarfed in interest level by teams like the Lakers and Warriors and even the Clippers and the Suns. But they also, they overachieved in 2020 when they reached the conference finals. They pulled the comeback with the Clippers in the bubble.
And Utah, and remember, in the first
round. Yeah, of course. I can still remember Donovan Mitchell in a very tight game. I'm sure Donovan's not happy to bring this up, like walking the ball up the court and getting an 8-second call in the middle of a meltdown. I'll never forget that. It's one of the more amazing moments. But yes, that was not a high point for the Jazz or the Clippers. So they had a great run there. And then Jamal Murray got hurt the next year, and it kind of put them into this time lock where we didn't really have a lot of expectations for him, even as Jokic is winning MVPs. So now look, they're loaded. They're deep. They're in great position. Michael Porter Jr. looks healthy. Jamal Murray looks really healthy. He is regaining the form that he has. Their defense is better than it's really been on a regular basis. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, that pickup has been really good for them. Bruce Brown. I mean, Bontemps is on this signing immediately. Yeah. I mean, Bontemps, you've gone so far as to say, I think publicly, that the switch out for Bruce, losing Bruce Brown and bringing in Ben Simmons, has been a disaster for the Nets, and it's been a boon for the Nuggets. McMahon, you pay attention to the Nuggets more than I think Tim and I do.
I can watch them on League Pass, unlike you.
No kidding.
I can watch Nuggets, unlike the six states that surround Denver, including the Denver metropolitan area.
Listen, I have difficulty watching the Thunder. So I'm going to a Thunder game. And when I watched the Thunder play against the Lakers two, three weeks ago when LeBron beat the record, I was extraordinarily impressed with how excellent Jalen Williams, the perimeter defender, was. I just hadn't get a chance to see him because of NBA League Pass shenanigans. It was eye opening. So I'm looking forward to watching him again tomorrow night. But anyway, McMahon, you've watched the Nuggets a lot. It's sort of in your sphere. This is the best chance they've had to win a championship I know that with Melo that they made the Western Conference Finals once, but I don't.
Yeah, this is George Karl.
That
was a pretty competitive series.
Yeah, no, they had very good teams then. Melo at his peak was not a two-time, potentially three-time MVP. Look, the Nuggets are going to be the number one seed. They've got a five-game cushion with 23 games to go. They have that really matters. They have the best home record in the NBA. They're 27-4 at home. They didn't go trade for KD or Kyrie or, you know, for better or worse, pick up Russ as a buyout guy. So they didn't make these massive splash type of moves that other teams in the West playoff picture made. But they addressed their biggest rotation weakness, which is the backup center. Even if it's 8 minutes a game, we've seen it with the Sixers. We've seen it with the Nuggets. We've seen teams that have these all NBA centers get sunk in the playoffs because they just have been so bad with those guys off the floor. I'm not saying Thomas Bryant is a Hall of Famer, but he's at least a high quality backup big. So getting him,
he's better than DeAndre Jordan, as some people would say on the spot.
Well, I was going to be polite. And that's an insult to Thomas Bryant to even make that comparison. And listen, Reggie Jackson obviously has his flaws, or the Clippers wouldn't have let him go. But I think he's an upgrade over Bones Highland. And this is a guy who has proven that he can perform in the playoffs. Look at his last taste of the playoffs in 2021 with the Clippers, you know, basically averaged 18 a game. Not that I think he's going to have to do that for the Nuggets, or will do that for the Nuggets, but I thought that was a nice, you know, pickup as far as buyout pickups go. But again, this is a team that has the best player in basketball, arguably. Jamal Murray looks like a co-star again. Aaron Gordon, I thought he was more deserving of being an all-star than Jaren Jackson Jr.
Tim Connelly made a bunch of really smart, shrewd moves as a president GM before he got poached away to the Wolves. When he signed that Aaron Gordon contract, it was a 4-year, $92 million extension. And they had given up some stuff for him. Although RJ Hampton,
just got waived. Yeah.
Yeah. That ended up looking pretty
good. They gave up one first round pick.
Right.
They gave up for
him. Yeah. But there were some people who thought Hampton would be a decent player. Anyway, they signed him to a $23 million a year deal. And there was some eyebrow raising whether about that contract. That contract now looks pretty good. And he did it knowing he was probably going to have to pay Michael Porter Jr. head into luxury tax. So it was a bit of a risk contract, but I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to say that about
I'm just running down the roster. We mentioned the additions of KCP and Bruce Brown. I've been impressed with Porter, the way he has played, and probably even more so the way that he has handled the situation of, hey, he's not always going to close games depending on the lineup that Michael Malone wants to play. I think Michael Malone is one of the better coaches in the league as well. I go through all this to tell you, as talented as the Suns are, the West still is going to have to go through Denver. It's going to have to go through the number one seed with the best home record in the NBA.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I think that there's no player with more on the line in the playoffs this year than Nikola Jokic in the NBA. I think if you, like I was texting with some people about this last night, if you were just picking guys, you're going to start, you have to win 16 games, you're picking guys across the league. Right now, how far down the list are you going before you pick Jokic?
Jokic was one of the last players taken on the All-Star game.
Well, set that aside.
Well, that's not quite the same. Listen, I hear what you're saying.
No, but I'm just like, is he?
He's still awfully high. Yes, he's still awfully high.
I don't think he's in my top five because I'm not sure I can win in the playoffs with a center. And I'm not sure I can win in the playoffs like we've talked before with a center that's bad on defense. And we'll set aside whether he's awful.
Now, let me call bull spit on this real quick. Last year was the first time that Jokic has been in the playoffs. They didn't win at least one series, right? And they didn't, they had two max guys who weren't in uniform. They didn't win a series. Jokic only averaged 31, 13, and 6.
Like, I understand. Give me a break.
Other than that, they've gone to the second round every single, the other 3 years, including the West Finals 1 year. When they got through Utah, Jokic hit a tough, tough turnaround. They ended up being the Game 7 winner over Rudy Gobert. I'm just going to tell you, Jokic's playoff numbers, and I know you can say, well, defense, blah, blah, blah. Jokic's playoff numbers, 26.4 points, 11.5 rebounds, 6.4 assists on really good efficiency. My point is this. Let's not act like Nikola Jokic has shriveled up during the playoffs, okay?
Hold on. Well, that was a lot of ranting about something I didn't say, which you implied. I never said he like pulled a James Harden in the playoffs. I never said that. I was at those games in the bubble. He was great there. However, they got out of the first round and lost as a higher seeded team, I believe, to Portland in the year before the bubble. They had
that
those
was
two comebacks.
Classic series against Portland.
Didn't Portland win that game 7 on the road in Denver?
Let me look, but that was the triple overtime. Was it a triple overtime game?
I don't think it was. That was a crazy series, but I'm pretty sure Portland won game 7 on the road series.
It was a 6 game. Portland won in 6.
Portland won in 6. So Portland, a pretty mediocre Portland team.
They won them. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. In 2019, Portland won in 7. Yeah, and they played them again in 21, and Portland won in 6.
Got it.
They lost to Portland twice.
Got it. In 21 without Murray, I'll say.
Right. Well, right. Obviously, he wasn't playing then. But if you win 3 MVPs in a row, and you're the number one seed in the West, this is my point. If you win 3 MVPs in a row, which Jokic is on pace to do, if you're the number one seed in the West, in a Western conference that, as we've talked about many times, is as wide open as we've ever seen a conference in the league, right? This year, Denver has to win at least 2 rounds. They have to at least get to the conference finals. They have to be a team that's got a chance to be in the NBA finals. If they play, say, Golden State in the first round, and they lose to Golden State in the first round, totally hypothetical situation, then it's going to completely color how people look at Nikola Jokic going forward. Like, there's just no question about that. You can't have the accolades that he has, whether it's fair or not, and not have postseason success now without it radically shaping how people look at him. Now, if they win 2 or 3 rounds, say they make the NBA finals, right? Then the opinions on him are going to totally change. Because look, I think if right now, if you're trying to win 82 games, it's pretty hard to argue that your first pick shouldn't be Nikola Jokic. He's pretty obviously the best regular season player in the league. The question now is, where does he rank if you're trying to win 16 games? And these playoffs are really, like you said, they've had injuries. They've sort of been in a time lock. He's been awesome. This spring is his chance to prove he should be at the top of that list. And I think if you ask people around the NBA right now, he's not one of your top 3 or 4 picks.
And where he is right now in that sense reminds me of the situation that arguably the two other best European products in basketball history, at least NBA history, we're in. And I'm referring to Dirk and Giannis. And you know, we've made the Giannis comparison, and the Bucks fans keep reminding me about how I said, hey, it's tough to give a guy 3 straight MVPs if he hadn't taken his team to the finals yet, despite the fact it's a regular season award and that's playoff success. It's still tough. I stand by that. It's just, I mean, at some point, like, dude, the evidence on the regular season this year is overwhelmingly in Jokic's favor. And then Giannis obviously shut all that up by not just leading the Bucks to a championship, but, you know, coming back from injury and having one of the most dominant finals, especially the dominant finals closeout game that we've ever seen. But, I mean, Dirk, remember, it wasn't until 2011, you know, whatever, 12, 13, however many years it was into Dirk's career, that people shut up about the soft hero stereotype. And all he had to do was be the lone all-star on a championship team that knocked off Kobe's two-time defending champion Lakers. You know, this super team forming in Oklahoma City. This, you know, the super friends Miami Heat in their first year together. Well, Dirk made a run through that and you know, sang an off-key rendition of We Are the Champions, and suddenly people shut up about the soft hero stereotype. But even though, and Dirk had some significant playoff failures, 06 finals, 07 first round against the We Believe Warriors, but he was a 25-10 guy in the playoffs, and people acted like he shriveled up in the postseason when it wasn't true, but it was the perception. So if you want to talk about the reality, the perception is what matters. I hear what you're saying about Jokic and the playoffs.
Yeah, because, like, to be clear, I'm not saying he's personally performed badly or disappeared in games or anything like that. It just, to me, it comes down to, like we've talked about so many times, can a player of his archetype push a team forward in the playoffs now? Like, even a guy like Dirk. Dirk's one of my favorite players to watch ever.
Well, his archetype is going to be three-time MVP. Well, that's the archetype.
I understand.
And one of the most unique players in NBA history. Like, he's a Dirk Larry Bird blend as far as offensive style. Like, we haven't, you know, he's a 7-foot point guard who shoots 63% from the floor while averaging a triple double. Like, we haven't seen this before.
Well, yes, but I'm talking about centers in particular, and specifically a center who's not very good on defense. That's not something that has really ever won a title. And look, if he goes through the playoffs this year and they win the title or they make the finals, he's going to erase any doubts about that, obviously. But that's why, to me, in terms of perception of him going forward these playoffs, I don't think there's another player in the league who's got more riding on it from an outside perspective than him. Obviously, he doesn't pay attention to any of that stuff.
Where do the Nuggets rank right now in defense? I'm asking.
I'll look it up, but I want to clarify something because I don't want the Nuggets fans coming after me. They lost to Portland in 7 and 19. In 2021, they won that series.
Right,
and then lost the Suns in 4. And in the series against Portland, Jokic was awesome. Like, averaged like 33 and 11.
None of this is about Jokic. None of this is about Jokic scoring 5 points a game. But nobody's saying that.
When I do make mistakes, which I do, people claw over broken glass to get to me to tell me I made a mistake.
For example,
in Arizona where there is a 2% state income tax. A few weeks ago, I said there was no state income tax. Having lived in New York, it felt like 2% was no income tax, but it is 2%. So I want to apologize to all the taxpayers of Arizona where I am currently.
What are you doing? What are you doing right now?
By the way, Nikola Jokic, this awful defender, and I'm going to get super nerdy with you. Defensive box plus minus this season, number one in the league, Nikola Jokic.
I'm just telling you.
I brought up a few weeks ago.
My eye test instead of the stats with Nikola Jokic on defense. I don't think your eye test player.
your eye test. You look in the mirror every morning. Your eye test is. I mean, it is broken, dude.
Okay, boss.
This is like a few weeks ago when I brought up that the Nuggets were the number one clutch defense in the league, and Bontemps just smothered me. Just completely threw me out the window on that one. But I agree with you, Bontemps.
I kind of hopped on the bandwagon there just because it was fun.
Let me just say, the thing about Jokic in a playoff series, he can play a lot of minutes. He never really seems to wear out. Even when he was heavier, he didn't seem to wear out.
Mm-hmm. Never gets hurt. Never even like twists an ankle. He's just out there doing his thing all the time.
He generally doesn't get into foul trouble. So he's able to play a lot of minutes. So he is a quintessential workhorse. So that profile, along with a team that is the deeper and more multifaceted than he's had in the past, that profile is something that should be able to be the old warhorse through four playoff rounds.
No question.
He has the profile to do it. I believe he can do it. I'm not sure his team will all deliver. Because I have no idea what you're getting from Michael Porter Jr. from a game one to a game two, much less from a first quarter or a fourth.
No, I mean, to McMahon's point earlier, in clutch time situations, I would hope that he's on the bench and Bruce Brown is playing. That's probably their best lineup when they're deep in the playoffs, because Michael Porter is just going to get torched on defense every time.
Yeah. So, but I will say this, like, when he wins the third MVP, because the straw poll was extraordinarily firm that was pointed in that direction. And
yep. I'm curious to see if there's a little backlash to how much of a lead he had. Cause one of the most consistent things I heard being in Salt Lake City was shock at just how big a lead he had, which is what we talked about too. And I do wonder if there's some pushback in the other direction. Now Giannis has got this wrist thing. He's probably the guy with the best chance to catch him. Yeah, Jokic is probably
going to
win.
Who knows how much time he misses, you know?
Right.
Also, Embiid, who you guys know how I feel about Embiid, the Sixers have the number one hardest schedule left. No matter whose metric you look at, they have the hardest schedule. So listen, that's a risk-reward thing. Embiid has maybe upward mobility there, but I don't think the Sixers are a perfect team. I think they're going to take some losses.
Yeah, for sure. Jokic is almost certainly going to win. Barring something.
And, you know, Jokic doesn't get hurt. So I have no doubt he's going to go right through the tape. And they're in position to not have to kill themselves down the stretch. It's all setting up.
And Jokic is starting to chase stats. I'm telling you, Chase, that triple-double against the Mavericks.
You're not the only person who's brought that up to me either, McMahon.
But the fact, but 21-0 when the guy gets a triple-double.
No, for sure.
Crazy stat.
And like I said,
they have a good record no matter what happens. They have a good record when he doesn't get a triple.
For sure. I mean, he's great. He's fun to watch. I love watching him play. I've always liked great passing big men. He's the greatest passing big man of all time. Like, I think Denver's great. I just think there's a ton of, at least mm-hmm. from an outside perspective standpoint, I just think it's all of them to win. And your point about their home court record is there too, McMahon. Like, they're dominant at home. Like, this is all set up for them to be in the NBA Finals. Now, let's see if they can get there.
Except for the fact that the Suns just traded for Kevin Durant.
Well, and Steph Curry's out there and all these other teams. Yeah. But I just mean, like, they're the number one seed in a wide-open West with a great home record and the likely three-time MVP. That should be a team with a profile to at least win a couple series. So,
all right. So, speaking of the West, a team that didn't think the Nuggets were a problem. I don't mean to pile on that quote from Ja. It's kind of what I expect.
Well, it's what happens. If you say I'm fine in the West, you better be fine in the West.
And it ain't the first time that Ja Morant and the Grizzlies have put a massive bullseye on themselves. Like, this is it's not like, oh, that quote came from outer space. This is who they are. This is what they do.
It wasn't Nikola Jokic saying we're fine in the West. That would have been a thunderclap out of the blue.
Well, the thing about it was that he had the chance to roll it back on a couple of occasions and doubled and tripled down. So
he goes up the chimney. He ain't coming back down.
That's right. I was there for that one too, man. They are a legendary quote machine, the Grizz.
So McMahon, the Grizzlies they wheezed to the break. They lost their mojo. Now they have a reset. In your mind, where are the Grizzlies to give a fair assessment of where they're at right now?
I mean, they ran into Shannon Sharp and just fallen apart since then. Maybe something to do with the fact that Stephen Adams banged his knee up, and they missed Stephen Adams, but that 4-9 going into the All-Star break.
The stats before and after that thing are wild across.
Yeah. And again, I think we can probably correlated with Stephen Adams.
Yeah, for sure.
More than any impact of a guy wearing a really expensive and ugly cardigan sweater.
Yeah, that's my point. It's like, you don't think about Stephen Adams being that important, but like, you look at their numbers, they have cratered at both ends ever since then.
Yeah, which is interesting because I think we saw last year against the Timberwolves, Stephen Adams basically got played out of that series. So, you know,
he's a high level role player, but he is a role player. I mean,
100%. Yeah.
I mean, they should not. I understand, like, a huge part of their offense of system is based around the offensive rebound. And Stephen Adams is one of the best offensive rebounders mm-hmm. of the last decade. But they should not fall to pieces just because he's out.
He's also one of the best screeners. I think he's a better run blocker than Shannon Sharpe ever was. Probably nowhere near the pass receiver.
That was a defining characteristic from that moment is that Shannon Sharpe not only did not want any piece of Steven Adams, but also didn't say a word about him afterwards.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hey, John Morant, you want some? I mean, Dylan Brooks, which, hey, there's some risk involved there. T. Morant, bro, just go. Please take a seat. Calm down, sir. You're damn near my age. Shannon Sharpe's older, but I can't tell you the last time I benched 400 like he's doing on a regular basis. Oh, wait, never. and I assure you, neither is T. But yeah, Steven Adams, that's one that it's like when there was the Pacers Grizzlies beef that obviously went way too far post game. But James Johnson, Steven Adams, like nobody wanted to see that because that's like an Avengers clash type of thing. No one wants to see that fight.
Also, Steven Adams' hair came out and was like, he had his long hair down his Steven Adams is actually half Tongan, South Pacific Islander. Mm-hmm. His Tongan mane was down his back. Somehow in that altercation, his hair came out and it was like he was ready for battle. It was like those flapping in the wind.
But again, getting back to the basketball stuff, yes, they miss Steven Adams, but dude, culturally, there are some concerns, some pretty significant concerns right now with the Grizzlies. And we love the talk and the arrogance, the quotes, all that stuff. It feels like, okay, is the main thing still the main thing in Memphis? They need a refocus. Yes, they need a refocus there. Job, man, one of the most exciting players in the league. An all NBA player without question. It just feels like there's too much going on that's not about basketball right now.
Well, and to go back to the, you know, I'm fine in the West quote, you could talk a lot, but you better win. You know, yeah. Golden State has spent years talking all the time. Steph's dancing all the time. Draymond's yapping all the time. Klay's walking around putting up, you know, four or five fingers to the Suns after that game earlier this year. But you can talk all the time when you have four rings. You've been to the finals six times, and you have one of the great dynasties in NBA history. The Grizzlies haven't got out of the second round, and they're in danger of becoming the Lob City Clippers, another team that talked a lot, mm-hmm. another team that kept losing in the second round of the playoffs and eventually became kind of a punchline. And that's when you talk a lot, that's the line you walk. And again, sort of a similar thing to Denver. They've got a ton of young talent. They've been up near the West, top of the West again this year. Giannis called the most electrifying player in the league when he drafted him. That's certainly my opinion. They're super fun to watch. I love that they talk like they do. But again, the West is wide open. You're one of the top two seeds. Are you going to back it up in advance? Or are you going to lose in the first or second round? And if they do, they're going to go into next year with a lot of questions about, you know, just what their ceiling is as a team.
Well, and their biggest, if we want to just focus purely on basketball, they're not a good half-court offensive team.
Nope.
They're a mediocre half-court offensive team. And obviously, out in transition with Ja running the show, like, they're lethal. But as playoff series, you know, it's hard to play that fast in the playoffs. You're going to have to grind out possessions. And, you know, they went out and got Luke Kennard to give them another shooter. That's a pretty significant concern as well. They're the worst offensive team. Probably it's going to be in the West playoff picture.
And they were aggressive at the deadline too. I mean, they didn't get a lot done, but they were trying on stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Zach Lyman was trying to make that team better. I think they saw that they had an opening if they could make the right move. They didn't get a move done, but you know, I think they know that there's an opportunity there and that they're in position where they better take advantage of.
Okay. Well, they definitely, their pressure won't really come until the postseason, but they definitely need to look at it. And I will say this, Steven Adams might want to consider extension talks because
he just signed one.
He signed like a 1 year extension.
I don't even think, is he even allowed to extend again? I don't, I'm not sure he is.
Oh, he signed the extension right before the season. I thought he signed it last year.
Yeah, no, he signed it. I'm pretty sure he signed it before the season.
Well,
I'm looking it up right
anyway.
Now.
What a terrible agent you are. By the way, Ja was complaining a little bit before the break about all the national media just pounces on the Grizzlies when there's a losing streak. They don't pay attention when anybody else has a losing streak. And I checked with the Elias Sports Bureau and ESPN Stats and Information. This is a record for the quickest turn from complaining about we don't get any national attention to national media hates on us all the time. It is a record in any sport. We've never seen it turn that quickly.
Well, that's the nature of it. All right. The Golden State Warriors made a pretty significant move at the deadline, obviously moving James Wiseman, not because it changed their team that much, but because it indicated, as Bontemps has said, that the two-track plan was being set aside because they had this idea that they could transition to the Moses Moody, Wiseman, Jonathan Kuminga core from the Draymond, they're really kind of trying to set up saying goodbye to Draymond. I think that's what's code for, because Draymond can opt out this summer. That now doesn't appear to be the case. The question is, can they still get everything together this season? And I don't think we have the answer to that yet. And I still think after everything that's gone on, they're a 500 team. They have basically been a 500 team for 3 months. Maybe they fall three games below 500, they get back to 500. Maybe they crawl three, four games above 500, they go back to 500. They basically then win one, lose one for months on end.
And Anthony Slater has a running tweet that he tweets every time they get back to 500. It's about 20 lines long now.
Right. He's going to run out of space. He's going to have to buy the Twitter subscription to keep that going.
He already has a Tesla.
The thing about it is, when a team says who they are, you kind of believe them. So if they are a 500 team through 60 games, typically I would say that's a 500 team. But then you say, well, wait a minute, Curry's had two injuries and Clay wasn't right at the beginning of the season. And when they're all assembled and, the fangs are out, like they're still potent.
When Steph Curry, Clay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Kevon Looney, and Draymond Green are on the court, 331 minutes, Golden State is outscoring teams by 22 points per 100 possessions.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That Wiggins injury, too, was bad.
You also, when a team tells you who they are, you believe them. Like, are we confining that to a one season or three quarters of a season sample size, or are we expanding that to an era?
Well,
because this team has told us they're champions four times.
That's a great point. So, yeah. So, I'm talking from 10,000 feet. You go back to 30,000 or 60,000, whatever you want to do with this metaphor.
Well, to McMahon's point, I'm picking Golden State to win every series they're in until they don't at this point, based off of who's in the West. Are either you picking against them if they're obviously assuming they're healthy? Are either you picking against them in a series in the West?
If they're the eight seed, and I've seen the We Believe Warriors as an eight seed win, but if they're the eight seed going to Denver, I'm not picking the Warriors in that series.
I will pick Golden State to win that series.
Yeah, you know what? It'd be a fun series to see. I'm not betting a mortgage payment on it or anything, but
I'm still scrolling to find a lineup that has a better better net rating than Golden State. I'm on the third page. I'm waiting to see if I can find it.
Nobody's debating that. It's just
I'm just genuinely curious to see how low I have to go before somebody's got better than a 21 net rating in terms of minutes played.
So, but here's the thing. So how many consecutive series have they won a road game?
That's a good point too.
Somewhere approaching the LeBron stat.
I think they passed LeBron.
They might have.
They did. I was the guy who used to track that LeBron stat. And I've now forgotten what it was. It was like 25 or 26. I think the Warriors past it, consecutive series with at least one road win. So,
by the way, fun little thing: the team that does have a better net rating than I finally got to was the former starting lineup for the Suns, which was +25 in 75 minutes, which was like six pages in. So,
The thing about
it's been the best lineup in the league.
The Suns, despite kind of being looking at each other sideways to start the season, they started the season 15-6, and then the team went completely sideways with injuries, and then they blew up the roster and everything. But you know that, you know, they don't have the same track record, obviously, as the Warriors. But there's an excellent team inside the Suns there too when they're all together.
So here it is. This was going into the finals, and they won one in the finals.
27 is the number.
Well, thanks, dude. I did all that damned research. Freaking like. Listen,
I think
learned
LeBron
how to like search and Slack. This is a minor miracle, and you stole my thunder.
I think the LeBron record was 25, and the Warriors were the ones who ended it in his last series in Cleveland when they swept him 4-0.
Yeah. Now the flip side of this, and this gets back to, you know, how big of a sample size are you going to believe this season versus this era, is the Warriors right now. Their road record is 7-22. Teams that are worse than that: Houston Rockets, San Antonio Spurs, Detroit Pistons.
So what do we believe? Do we believe the 10,000 feet, or do we believe the 30,000 feet? That's kind of the Western Conference this year, right?
Well, and especially the Warriors this year.
Yeah. So before we move to the East, I want to real quick take a look at the Clippers with the decision to sign Westbrook. the Clippers are pretty much admitting that Paul George drove this decision. And, you know, from what I understand, you know, they were, you know, internally they were against it at the start. Paul pushed for it publicly and privately. Mm-hmm. Kawhi supported it, and they looked more into it, and they were like, well, you know, there are some things he could potentially help us with. And, you know, one of the things that is a factor for us is we tend to kind of get a little low fee. And, you know, this is a guy who potentially could, you know, they talked themselves into it, is a long story short. Now, Lawrence Frank, in his meeting with the media, tried to make it very, very clear that the role was, we were very, very honest with Russ about what the role definition. And I was like, okay, cool. It makes sense. But there's some speculation. On Monday, when I was with Spears and Goldsberry, the concept of Russ starting came up, and I almost fell out of my chair. But
and you got one of those good chairs that allows you to do the you know, the little double fingers thing while you're leaning back, so it takes a lot to get you out of that chair.
But Bontemps, I think you think there's a chance they are going to start.
Yeah, I mean, look, the stars on the team advocated for, I mean, I guess we don't know exactly what Kawhi said, but I'm sure if Kawhi said, I don't want this guy on my team, they wouldn't have signed him. Paul George was certainly loudly advocating for him to start, and they're starting Terrence Mann. Now, do I think Terrence Mann is better than Russell Westbrook? Yes. Would I rather have Terrence Mann playing than Russell Westbrook? Yes. Would I have signed Russell Westbrook? Absolutely not. But the Clipper stars wanted Russell Westbrook. They signed him. My guess is he's going to get a chance to start. Now, well, I don't think that will end well, but that's my guess.
Hey, anytime two superstars in LA say they want Russell Westbrook on their team, it's pretty much a guaranteed recipe for success, right? Oh, and then you ask him to accept a smaller role. We've seen how well this works in the past.
Yeah. Darvin Ham's comments on Russ signing with the Clippers were clipped, as best I can say. The thing I would say is, okay.
Was that pun intended?
Yes. You can't impress on him that he's got a limited role and then let him start, because then what do you do if it doesn't work?
Well, look, I mean, there's a couple things, right? A couple things about this. I've obviously been very loud from the moment the Lakers traded for Russ that it was an absolute disaster for many reasons. I do think this situation could actually maybe work out decently for the Clippers. A, he's on a minimum. If it's a disaster, you can cut him in theory and just get rid of him. It's not like they're worried about the money. Not like they're worried about his contract. They can just dump him if it doesn't work. The Clippers have a team, as you guys both know, with a ton of wings, a lot of floor spacing, a lot of shooting, not too different than what they were doing in Houston, right? Like, man, they could just have him go downhill, get to the paint, kick it out to shooters. There is at least a better offensive structure in place there for him. And in theory, because the vets on the team and the stars on the team are bought in, if he is, say, playing off the bench in 20 minutes a game and they do just keep starting Terrence Mann, then he can be a little bit of a change of pace, you know, change up for them. And it's not asking him to play 35 minutes a game. If he does come in and is starting and is playing 35 minutes a game and is on the court in the fourth quarter of playoff games,
right,
that will be bad. But if he does actually agree to be a change of pace off the bench playing 50 minutes a night in playoff games, I do think in a limited role on this roster, it could actually work out okay. But I'm skeptical that's the role he's going to be in.
Now, I would agree with that. But like having him on the court to start and finish games with two wings who are going to have the ball in their hands the vast majority of the time makes zero sense. And you think about the point guards that you know, were linked to the Clippers going into to the trade deadline. You know, they're guys like Fred VanVleet, Mike Conley, Kyle Lowry, guys who are perfectly comfortable getting you into your offense and then playing off the ball. You know, guys who are, you know, threats as spot-up shooters. Like, that's the opposite of what Russ is. So role definition and acceptance is going to be absolutely essential to this being something that, you know, I don't know if Russ is going to push them over the finish line or anything, but okay, in a limited specific role, I see what you're saying. Bontem said he could help. Russ is like, you know, the Clippers' new big three. Boy, that's a disaster.
Who said that?
Instagram. I'm pretty sure I can find you some photoshops from some Disney sponsored accounts.
I will admit that there is a window of opportunity for this to work, but I will also say Terrence, the Clippers had just been starting to play some of their best basketball. Terrence Mann just had one of his best games of the season. Mm-hmm. The last game before the break against the Suns, who had been hot. It was a real quality win. He played great. You know, they had just cleared out their point guard position.
Yeah.
And so now you are already probably messing with him he's the guy they've signed. I'm not saying he's their point guard of the future, but he signed an extension. It's kicking in next year. I just question, but you know, I guess there's a window that it could work. And the most important thing when it comes to Westbrook is that the Lakers traded three quality players and a first round pick for him and paid him $47 million this year, destroying their cap flexibility. So when he didn't work out there, the crater was enormous. There is no skin in the game for the Clippers other than the recent momentum that they have had. And so, you know, it is completely different.
And they had Westbrook coming off the bench. So maybe the Clippers will be able to say to him, look, come in and come off the bench and play 20 minutes a game for us.
There were games this year where Westbrook helped the Lakers off the bench.
Yeah, for sure. Westbrook got too much blame in LA. There's no doubt about that. Also, like, if you're going to blame Westbrook, you have to blame LeBron and AD. They're the ones who wanted him there in the first place. Listen,
that defeat had many fathers, no matter who wants to step up and handle it.
But look, I was just going to say the main reason, like, we absolutely need to take the Clippers seriously as contenders is Kawhi is back to being absolutely one of the best players in the league. Last dozen games, he's averaging basically 27, 6, and 5, a couple steals, shooting 52% from the floor, 48% from three-point range. He's
willing to go back to the convo from the beginning. If they're both healthy and you know they're healthy, which obviously Kawhi is a big if,
right?
Are you taking Kawhi or are you taking Jokic in the playoffs? I'm taking Kawhi. I mean,
yeah, you have to take the guy who has two finals MVPs. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. And just when you watch Kawhi move as he hunts those mid-range shots and his lift, it looks like Kawhi Leonard again.
Yep.
Who was the player that said to him, God, who was it like 2 weeks ago who said, you ever miss from the mid range? God, who was it? It was caught on mic.
I remember the what you're talking about. I think it was DeRozan. Was it DeRozan? No.
No, it was some younger player. It was some younger player.
DeRozan's one of the few guys who might be better than him.
I was going to say DeRozan, Durant, there ain't many.
But my favorite part it was okay. Caught on the mic during the game, and he said, hey, do you ever miss from mid-range? And Kawhi goes, yeah.
Typical Kawhi answer. Kawhi, the conversation.
Yeah.
It was accurately picked up on the mic. All right, before we move to real quickly looking at some pressure team in the East, Bontemps, you have trivia. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Now it's time for a Hoop Collective Trivia.
Yes, very simple. There are 10 players, now including Antetokounmpo, who lead their franchise all-time in points and assists. Who are they?
LeBron.
Okay, do it again. I was trying to look up Kawhi. You ever miss?
Giannis trying to look up the answer to the question.
Giannis became the 10th player to lead his franchise all-time in points and assists recently. Who are the other 9 guys? LeBron is one of them.
Nine.
They're not. These aren't exactly secret names.
Did Dirk lead him in assists just because he played for 20 years?
No. I think it's Derek Harper actually.
Okay, yeah. That's
all right. Let me cheat. I'm not cheating. I'm looking at the teams, and we're going to go about it that way.
John Stockton. No, that's not happening.
You said LeBron.
I'm thinking all times.
LeBron is one.
Yeah, you know I'm bad at trivia.
Not Havlicek, is it?
Nope.
Right.
There's two of these guys.
Lopez.
Two of these guys are active players,
and LeBron was one of them.
Three of them. Mike Conley, Memphis.
Mike Conley, Memphis.
Oh wow, that's a good one.
Yeah. We just talked about one of the this guy's team for a while.
Nikola Jokic?
No, not him. The other team we talked about after that.
Steph
Curry.
That's okay.
Conley, Steph, LeBron. So we got those three. Giannis, four. So we got four of the 10.
Four of the 10. You got all the Kyle guys.
What about Kyle Lowry in Toronto?
Kyle, I don't believe leads in points. I think DeMar does, but he's not on the list.
Michael
Jordan. You got all the guys who are playing right now. Jordan is fifth one.
Reggie Miller's not an Indy.
Reggie Miller.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, I was thinking of guys who played really long stretches. Like,
have Reggie Miller top five in assists all time?
That's why I was going to say we were doing the top five assist question when I saw him on this.
I was saying that because he played for 20 years, not because he was a great passer.
God, who's the Magic's all time leading scorer?
It's not
Dwight Howard.
Might be Dwight Howard,
but it's not.
By the way, his team in Taiwan just got in a little brawl. Did you see that?
Yeah.
I'll give you the other teams for the to expedite this thing along.
Wait. Oh, I was gonna say Westbrook, but he didn't score.
Not Westbrook. Not Westbrook.
Gary Payton.
All right, go ahead.
Oh, Miami is one of the teams.
Oh, Hardaway.
Tim Hardaway?
No.
What?
Banana Boat Crew guy.
Dwayne Wade.
Detroit. Yeah,
he was pretty good. Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah. Minnesota.
Kevin Garnett.
And this is the one that's sort of a trick question. Sacramento.
Oscar Robertson.
There you go. That's the list.
Oh, that is a trick question. And he got it right away.
Yeah, well, sort of a trick question is a pretty good
Cincinnati.
Hint.
Yeah.
Kings. Also, I just made my maiden voyage to Sacramento's new arena. Beautiful new arena. Fun.
It is a really nice spot to watch a game.
Really, really lonely as far as the rafters go. And look up and there's like, I forgot, what is it? Like a Rochester or some, maybe, I don't know. Some really is like, boy, that was. That's
Rochester Royals, man.
Yeah,
Rochester
the
Royals.
That's where actually they store the beam is behind the Rochester Royals banner. And then they bring it out.
Speaking of Sacramento, because you were there to watch the beginning of the Luka Kyrie bromance. How was LeBron's open recruiting of Kyrie over the weekend received in Dallas, McMahon?
Well, they're mad at Wendy right now. They're mad at Wendy because Kyrie politely asked us not to ask any questions about this until after the season. So that means certainly should be off topic, off limits for discussion. And Wendy made one of his, put some makeup on and went on TV and pointed out the obvious that LeBron was blatantly recruiting Kyrie during this time. So, Wendy, I think people feel like you're just trying to usher Kyrie. Can you just, have you packed Kyrie's bags for him? Like, are you booking flights for him? They think you're like his travel agent trying to get him to LA.
The question for Kyrie is, are his bags unpacked? LeBron basically stopped just short of complimenting Kyrie's hair. He was like, oh, what? He's
well,
just
hair
a
is a sensitive subject
guy.
With LeBron.
And I love the way he's wearing his hair. Like that was like just short of the way
that would look so Kyrie, nice in that California sun.
Kyrie, have you lost weight? Do you have a new stylist, Kyrie? Like he was going all out. No, my favorite part, and Bontemps pointed this out, my favorite part of LeBron's post-game press conference was when he goes, "What a great All-Star weekend." When he didn't arrive until Sunday.
Oh, it's great. Shout out to Salt Lake City for a great All-Star weekend. It's like, you're here for 6 hours. 6 hours you were here. What are we talking about? Then I was cracking up because they had practice on Wednesday. He got excused. Somebody texted me. He goes, wasn't he in all Utah for 6 hours? I was like, yes, he was.
Well, he was in Cabo or wherever for a lot longer than that.
Listen, when you're LeBron, you can do whatever you want. But yeah.
Most important 23 games in his life.
It was a wild quote day for LeBron. But anyway, we only have time really for one Eastern Conference team here. So which Eastern Conference team is under the most pressure? I do think Milwaukee has some.
Well, there's two teams, Milwaukee and Philadelphia. They're both in the same spot.
I want to talk about Philly. I don't think they're quite in the same spot. Because I do admit that Giannis has a contract extension coming up this offseason.
If they play in the second round, you've got Chris Middleton who's going to be a free agent. You got Brook Lopez who's going to be a free agent.
Do we honestly
Drew Holiday with 1 year left on his deal? They lose in the second round. Who knows what happens with that team?
Do we honestly believe that Chris Middleton is opting out of $40 million?
Let's see what happens the next 4 months. If he's scoring 25 a game, the final couple months of the season and plays great in the playoffs. Yeah, I could see him opting out and getting a bunch of money this summer. Sure.
And there will be a market for him. Like, listen, if.
Yeah, let's say Kyrie leaves.
And the Mavericks would have to do some pretty significant financial maneuvering to be positioned to pursue Chris Middleton in free agency. But like, plan B is cap space. Plan A is long term with Kyrie. Plan B is probably bird rights in a sign and trade being of value. Plan C, the fallback plan, is cap space. They'd probably have to move Bertans or Hardaway to be able to do this. But do I think they would pursue Chris Middleton? Absolutely, especially considering Jason Kidd has coached him and has a relationship with him.
Even if you want to say it's a slightly different situation, the point is right now those two teams are lined up to play in the second round. And if they do, I'll tell you right now, I'll be covering that series because that's going to be an Armageddon series for one of those franchises.
Oh, it must be a big series. Hey, if we put long temps on it, it must be.
Well, I'm just saying those two, that 2-3 matchup, whoever's playing in that 2-3 matchup in the second round in the East, whoever loses that series, with the lesser exception of Boston, I just think one of those two teams, that they lose early, a lot could happen to them.
Somehow last year, when Boston was playing Milwaukee in the series of the playoffs, I was on, and Bontemps was on Philly. That's all I know.
Yep.
Okay. I think
Whitney just said he big dogged you last year.
No, I don't think he did. Somehow Bontemps was on Philly. That's Bontemps. Boston is Bontemps' team. What am I?
No, it's Mike's. Yeah, it was Mike's. The crazy thing
about
Philly.
About
he
Bontemps,
called you the world's ugliest chihuahua.
He moved away from Boston, and then the Celtics immediately got, like, literally he moved from Boston, and they went from being like a middling team to like championship contender.
Hey, if Bontemps moves this year, the Knicks are going to win the championship.
I think you're safe on that one.
He's got a long-term lease, that's why.
Two of Milwaukee's five starters and core players are potential free agents this summer, and Giannis has a extension option.
And Drew is 1 year away from free agency. Like, it's all coming to a head all at once.
Right. And one of their owners might be selling. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I don't know how that is all going to work out, but I think
Philly certainly,
but real quick, Giannis has 2 years left on his deal after this year. It's not quite the pressure point that it would be if he's got 1 year left. So just be clear on that. All right. Bontemps, you're in Philly like every 3 days.
Going to Philly in a couple hours to watch the Grizz tonight. Sixers Grizz to open the second half.
Ooh, let's see what happens there. Also
break schedule. Yeah.
Harden is a free agent to be, and is playing very well. Didn't make the All-Star team, but
should have.
He and Jalen Brunson should have found their way on that All-Star team
for sure.
But okay, it didn't happen. They have, been really good at times, but have also disappointed at times.
I make the argument the three best teams in the East in the league are the top three teams in the Eastern Conference. The problem is they're all playing in the Eastern Conference, and therefore one of them's at least not getting out of the second round.
Yeah. And so when they play their top end, like, I can absolutely see them winning the East. I just don't know if you can trust Harden and trust Embiid to stay healthy and trust Tobias Harris and Maxey to deliver. Trust Doc Rivers, quite frankly. Doc Rivers' teams are not known for
Doc Rivers has had playoff failures. James Harden has had playoff failures. Mm-hmm. Really? I wasn't aware.
Embiid has gotten hurt in the playoffs like every year.
Yep.
I mean, I can build a case for why they're going to win the East, but there's a lot of potholes that are in that history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look, we opened the show talking about Denver and all the pressure that's on Denver, right? Obviously, it's a bit of a different situation, but there's obviously immense pressure on the Sixers to advance this year. They have, Joel, after beating Denver last month, told me it's the best team he's ever been on. I would agree with that.
I agree.
They're deep. Mm-hmm. They're versatile. They can play big. They can play small. The Anthony Melton has been a fantastic piece for them. Putting him in the starting lineup instead of Tyrese Maxey, I think, is a really good move by Doc Rivers, one I wasn't sure Philly'd be able to make. But at the end of the day, if they get into the second round of the playoffs and lose again for the fifth time in 6 years, with James Harden going into free agency, with Doc Rivers having again failed to advance in the playoffs, you start to stack those things up, this thing could go sideways really fast. And if James Harden walks out the door this summer and goes back to Houston or goes somewhere else and leaves, then where's Joel Embiid with things at that point? Where is this roster at that point? Like, it's got, is Doc Rivers still the coach? Like, there's the potential for this thing to go kablooey in a lot of ways. And like you said, they are good enough where if they do play Milwaukee in the second round, I think Philly matches up pretty well with Milwaukee. I think they could win that series. Their best path to get out of the East is to somehow get to the one seed, have Boston play Milwaukee, have Milwaukee beat them, and then avoid Boston entirely. If they do that, I think Philly's got a really good chance to make the finals. I don't think right now with their schedule and where they sit in the standings, it's likely they could pull that off. But, there's immense pressure in Philly, and I think everybody there knows it. And, James Harden, unlike Nikola Jokic, James Harden, as we all know, and as me and McMahon have seen in person many times, has flamed out in huge spots over and over again. So he's got a chance to once again rewrite his own narrative if he has a big playoffs. But you have to have a huge question mark surrounding his ability to do that.
Yeah. I also believe that the Harden situation is one of the more under talked about things, what's going on during the season here. We are always guilty of looking ahead, and there has been very little discussion about Harden, probably because Philly's played generally really well for the last 2 months. But
yeah,
Christmas Day, Woj comes out with that story that Houston wants to go back after Harden. And it was like, whoa.
And not just that Houston wants to, but like Houston believes it is a legitimate possibility. And that's not coming out of thin air. James Harden still spends a lot of time in Houston, spends the summers in Houston, works out at the Rockets facility on a regular basis. Like, it's a very real possibility. And Harden, by the way, never shot it down. He just said, I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, he kind of, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it was kind of like a non-denial.
Non-denial, 100%.
Yeah. But that's just, that's gone away. And that, by the way, it's gone away, and he's played better and better and better. So like,
he's been really, really good. Been really good.
It's also a leverage point, right? Like, this is the thing. Like,
yes,
Kyrie actually is going to have he let LeBron recruit him to his heart's content because Kyrie wants to apply pressure to the Mavericks to offer a contract that nobody else can offer. Okay. Same with Harden. It behooves Harden to have the Sixers thinking 100%. He could walk, because this is a guy who's making less than the max and probably it wasn't getting a 5-year.
Well, and remember, took a large haircut this year to make sure they could sign PJ Tucker.
And it's working.
And
it's working.
Philly just slipped out of the tax this year.
Yeah.
And Josh Harris, who along with David Blitzer owns the Sixers, is talking about trying to buy the Commanders. They have plenty of money. So this is not a team where the tax should prevent them from signing anybody. So if I'm James Harden, I certainly don't mind the fact that there's people thinking I might leave, because then I walk in this summer and say, hey, fellas, I just took this $15 million haircut this year. Let's back up the truck. Give me a nice 5-year, $200-whatever million deal. Let's lock this in, right? Or if not, I'll go somewhere else.
James Harden can find better places to donate his charity money than to the billionaire owners. I can assure you of that.
Exactly. Right. You know, it all sets up for him to ask for a bunch of money. And, you know, if Philly makes a deep playoff run, everybody's going to be very happy to do that. They lose in the second round. Who knows?
And Harden's handled it great. And honestly, Kyrie, I think so far, it's early, but Kyrie's handled it fine. And basically the way that Harden is handled is like, dude, I'm not discussing this publicly. I'm going to hoop. The way Kyrie so far has handled it, I'm not discussing this publicly. Like I've said, we'll see how it goes. Looking forward to this season. Figured out this summer. That's that. There's nothing else to say. We're going to hoop. And that's all they – that's how you know, if you're running the Mavericks and the Sixers, short of them professing their loyalty, which it makes zero sense for them to do, that's how you want them to handle it.
Well, and the one person we haven't talked about with Philly is Joel Embiid. I've talked to Joel several times about this during the year. The thing he says every time is, I just want to have one postseason – where I don't have some BS freak injury and I can just play and not have to deal with something and just see how it goes. And as basketball fans, I think we all hope to see Joel not have some, you know, have Markelle Fultz run into his face or have his thumb caught on a jersey or get an elbow accidentally in the face. Like, he's just had a series of bad luck injuries, and hopefully he can avoid them this spring and we can see how far they can go.
And here's the thing. So somebody is going to get a bad draw in the East. Now, Philly, we talked about how their record is, or their schedule is hard, and they're in third place. they're not far behind Boston and Milwaukee. Milwaukee just lost Giannis for a little while. But
they also played Boston twice, including on Saturday.
Okay. So I don't, but it's hard to project with where their schedule is that they're going to get up there. Toronto is making a move. I would not want to see Toronto in the first round. I would not want to see Miami in the first round. But somebody is going to end up across the line from one of those teams. It's going to be a hard first-round matchup. Cleveland could end up facing Miami in the first round, and that's a bad matchup for Cleveland. but it could be Philly. Philly could end up with Miami. Philly could end up with Toronto, depending on what happens with the play-in and whether they can squeeze into six, which I believe they can because they're playing much better since they traded for Poeltl. And then you got the second round series, which is probably either going to be Philly-Boston or Philly-Milwaukee, which either of those teams in a lot of years in the last decade would have been far and away the favorites to win the Eastern Conference. So then you're going to have to play the other team. So somebody is going to draw a brutal run. And I'm looking at Philly as the team that I think might draw that. So we're talking about how they need a run and how the, and all the hurdles. They may have the toughest stretch we've seen in the East in a while. So more pressure on them to play well.
Well, and it's just one thing we haven't talked about at all, but in the wake of what happened at the deadline with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving going West, to me, there's some real pressure on Cleveland too. Like they should win a playoff series now. The idea that they just get in the playoffs and like, oh, it's a great year. They finally made the playoffs again. This franchise hasn't won a playoff series in 30 years without LeBron James. They are going to be pretty heavily favored to beat any of those teams in the first round, assuming they're in the 4-5. They're going to have home court advantage. I think there's going to be some expectations that they do that. And, you know, obviously it's not the same level as you got to get to the finals or the conference finals or things might go completely haywire with your franchise. But let's see how a young team that hasn't really been in that spot handles that, because I think they're going to have real expectations now.
Well, when you trade your entire future for Donovan Mitchell, and if you are able to draw the fourth seed and you have home court and then would be favored, yeah, the expectation would be that you would win that series. So I agree with you. All right. I got to go to Suns practice. Bontemps, you got to get to Philly. McMahon, you got to make sure your tan stays even.
Mav Spurs tonight, baby. By the way, easiest schedule for the rest of the season. Dallas Mavericks and coming out of the break with a 6-game homestand that starts with those pesky, pesky tanking Spurs.
At least you don't have to rodeo travel for a while, McMahon. That's good.
The rodeo road trip is continuing for the Spurs, and they have yet to win on it. And they didn't win for 5 or 6 games before the rodeo road trip. So,
I like the chance. Planned.
Spurs are setting themselves up for Victor Wembanyama. That's for sure.
All right. Thank you to Bruce and Jackson, our producers. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.